I was this demon, took on this demon form. I was this extremely powerful, ogre-like demon. And I could even tell my shadow or something, since I even had horns. And I was taking actually just down deeper and deeper into the earth, lower and lower, and the plains. Very intense. At a certain point, I got to a fire place, a grill type thing. I was going to pull it away and go even deeper. Maybe that was the last layer, I don't know. I just wanted to stay actually all the way down and just show it. How deep one can go. And I recall looking in a mirror. It was so intense, and seeing myself as this demon. Green skin, very gnarled, knobbly skin. A very clear view. Completely something out of a horror movie. Didn't really frighten me to see myself as a demon, but it was disturbing. And yet empowering. And I remember it was just the same time. But I remember seeing myself in the mirror and it just not being myself, being somebody else. And actually pulling my face off, like it was a latex mask. I can't remember what was underneath. Anyway, and after the demon dream, I was with Valerie, and immediately I came out of it, but I was still in the same dream, but I just came out with the demon form. And I was somewhat contrite, saying to her that I was going one way, I was going into my darkness. And she said, I should go the other way. She suggested that I be a painter, to be something positive. And I wasn't satisfied with that. I said I should be a healer.
Listening to The Liminalist, the podcast between. This is Jason Horsley, and this is Chronicles of a False Awakening, Part 6. Just received from Charles Upton. You may work your way up to a high station, but it will never be high enough. You can never go all the way up. God, however, has the complete power to come all the way down. I finish this podcast series with some ambivalence and with a slightly heavy heart. I may only be finishing it because I said I would. But if that's the case, then it won't be up to scratch, and no one will ever get to hear it. I feel that the Chronicle of False Awakenings are incomplete without the developments recounted here around Matrix Warrior, when I believed that all of my magic had paid off. I was about to ascend all the way to the eye in the pyramid. To end on the Harry incident would be to give the impression that I had seen the light, found God's love and grace, and turned over a new leaf, perhaps, that I had undergone a true awakening, or at least a lasting awakening. Now, whether an awakening can be true and not lasting is a question I won't get into. I believe that the awakening I experienced around the accident with Harry was true, but it was not lasting. Or at least, it didn't go all the way in. Didn't come all the way down to the soles of my feet. I wasn't able to walk the talk.
Captain Lock Starlight, I prefer to want to taste of depression, of real depression. That I'd almost forgotten what it was like. It came in my dreams. The dreams I experienced true depression. There was no ostensible reason for it, and there never is. What I recall is the way in which I was dealing with it, which is to go running on the heath. Keanu Reeves was here, and he was, I guess, still training for the Matrix, and he was running on the heath in the morning, and I was to go running with him. He had a particular route which was shaped like a bear. When he shut it off, and I lost him. Who knows, maybe I'll literally be going running soon, I don't know, but be sure I can keep up with Neo, my other self. Here's to you, Keanu. Thinking of you. Captain's log. Tuesday, July the 8th, 9th, 2002. Last night, I guess I pulled the old assemblage point out of the place of depression. And all the way into the place of euphoria. Seems a shame and somehow ironic that if I dream my sandwich point into a place of depression and I stay depressed the next day, whereas if I dream my sandwich point into a place of euphoria, I don't stay euphoric. But then I suppose that's a very simple explanation for that, that my sandwich boy has spent years accumulated in the place of depression, whereas it's never spent more than moments, really, combined, never more than a few minutes, I don't suppose, or an hour or so, in the place of euphoria, so it's much trickier for it to remain there. But awesome, just awesome to think that it's physically as feasible to fix the sandwich point in the state of infinite power, ecstasy, as it is in the little rut of depression. Well, and that's what we're working on, day by day. Now I'm disappearing. And I feel desperate. I feel alone. I feel I have no one to talk to. No one to express this insanity of transformation to. No one who could possibly understand where even I cannot understand it and I'm experiencing it. And what possible relief or support could I gain by sharing this? The words, the meaningless words. All I know is I might as well be dead. I might as well be dying. There is no difference. The annihilation of the self. And I've initiated this process slowly. 15 years gone by, and I cannot stop it now. It's actually nearing the completion, the culmination. And why would I wish to? But the pain is truly almost more than I can bear. And yet bear it I do. And I am the one. I am the one. I am the only one that is. All this I have summoned. I have assembled as if to protect myself from the terrible truth that I am the only one that is. And now the illusion cannot hold.
This is Charles Upton on Lucifer. Lucifer represents not the descent from principle into manifestation, but the potential, on every level of the ontological hierarchy, for delusion, privation, and subversion, the concrete manifestation of which, however, is only made possible by that very descent. As the light-bearer, he is symbolic in his unfallen mode of the new, the first intellect, the first eternal motion of God's knowledge of himself as other. The new, the uncreated intellect within man cannot be subverted in its essence, but it most certainly can be counterfeited and veiled. If he, Lucifer, had accepted the necessity of the descending radiation of the Absolute in the direction of manifestation, Lucifer would have been able, in his own case, to redress its potential deficiencies. Instead, he opposed it. In holding on to a higher conception of God as the formless absolute, he failed to understand that God's celestial and cosmic manifestation is in no way a departure from his essence, but rather a veiling of that essence for the very purpose of revealing it. In other words, like the sectarian Gnostics, he looked upon God's creative act not as a positive self-manifestation, but strictly as a fall. And by this very rejection of cosmic existence, which was both an intellectual error and a willful rebellion, he transformed it into a fall. This is the primordial irony. Lucifer saw the objective personal God as a veil covering the essence, which it is, but not as a theophany of that very essence, which it certainly also is. Thus, in the name of the preservation of the level of consciousness of the Atman, he barred the only effective road of return to that Atman, rejected God, entered into a state of self-worship, and fell. And the etiology of the fall of Lucifer is precisely the etiology of the ego.
But anyway, I've been thinking of starting things today about writing a bestseller. How to succeed in The Matrix without really trying to, because I was talking to Vivian today, and said that I should write a book. She just said it like that, as if I never hadn't already written a dozen books, and she meant a novel. And she just said a couple of times, a couple of different ways that I should write something. And we were talking, we've been talking about money and problems and all this. And so it just made me think, got me thinking. And I just said that I should write a self-help book. See, writing that would make money. One thing being that it could be very short and simple, as opposed to the books I've written, which tend to be very convoluted, deep. If I could write something that was less deep, easier, but it would also be more sellable. And then I had the idea about The Matrix, and to combine two different genres, as it were, a film book with a self-help book. Has potential. I know I could put together a treatment of kinds for the book in the next couple of days, and I could send that to a couple of my contacts, Mike Jones at Bloomsbury and Katie Forlane at Simon Schuster, and maybe a couple of others I can think of, and see if they'd be interested in it.
So the reason, as far as I can tell, for me to do this last podcast and to include the stuff about Matrix Warrior in it is that it still isn't over, podcast series, and that means that it still isn't over, like my recapitulation, to use a Castaneda term, unfortunately. Perhaps it's a reenactment, perhaps it's a final embodying, a final integration of the unrealized dream from that time, and the understanding that the reason the dream was unrealized was that it was an impossible dream. It was a dream of rebellion. It was an attempt to it was a continuation of the opposition of my fall, of my mundane material existence as a limited human incarnate being, the trauma of that birth trauma and whatever came after the birth trauma that made it impossible for me to simply embrace being here and to take refuge in the memory of a former state, thereby in opposition to the reality of the manifestation of myself, my soul, into the physical. That created a split between my physical awareness and experience and expression and that of my soul. Should be the collective soul, which is God. I mean, not that they're all synonymous, but the levels, different levels of God in manifestation, ending with the body and with matter. So my attempt to be the one and to concretize that declaration of intent, that manifest destiny and that will to power by publishing Matrix Warrior, having a bestseller, doing book tours as the one, getting the world to worship me as the one, even as a self-satire, which is how I tricked myself into thinking that it wasn't a power trip, because I really believed that it was a true satire. All of that, I mean, I've been able to see that dream couldn't come true because it would have been my undoing. But what I haven't fully seen is that the dream itself was impossible and false, because a dream, only a dream. At best, a memory of a former state, at worst, a delusional fantasy imposed on the present, my present state. Hence all the body pains. And it's come around to haunt me again, partly through my conscious design or acquiescence, perhaps, in doing these podcasts, revisiting that time, which at one level would have been a desire to recapture the dream, the period where it felt like it was still going to happen, to live in the past, but of course at deeper level, inevitably to re-experience the death of the dream and the truish awakening, at least that my awakening was false, paradoxically. But anyway, it's also come around to haunt me in the form of Jordan Peterson, who I'd been paying attention to a little bit, but not much, but my wife was particularly interested in, then became more and more interested in as his star ascended.
I feel just relief! Oh, God! So anyway, so I got a call from Simon Spanton, and I got back, and this is one day after I sent the attachment. He said he'd printed it up, he's read through it, he's passed it on to two other people, and he just thinks it's fantastic. He wants to offer me £10,000 for the world rights. Oh, God. Well, that came as something of a surprise, and yet, strangely enough, it didn't come as a surprise at all. I'm reeling. Oh, man. It's just so simple. Straightforward. Anyway, he seems to love the book, and that's just... part that I'm slightly disappointed in is that how long Simon thinks it'll take to actually get it released. He's talking about March. He's talking about bringing out hardback in March and aim for the paperback in time for the second sequel, which is December of the same year. And he's doing that first run of 10,000, I believe, or 10 to 15,000, which is not bad. First run, that's 10 times what Bud Poets had. And royalties are around 10%. And it's an £8 hardback, that's 80p thing. 80p times 10,000 is going to be 80p times 10,000. 8 times. Let's say it was a pound times 10, that would be £10,000. So it would be £8,000. Which is not much, but then. Not to be sneezed at either. That's only for the first run. We actually had a bestseller, size of 100,000, which is, should be very much within the possibilities of this book, then you'd be talking 10 times that, which is real money. That point, it is real money, to say nothing of where this could lead in terms of opening doors in Hollywood, where the real money is. So anyway, now I get to Temptation. Oh God, that's Temptation. All of this could be yours. Yes, it's, now it begins, Lord. Now it begins. Inevitable. Inevitable. There. Wow. Wow, 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 wow. Well, now I gotta watch out for the come down. This is something I've waited my whole life for, it seems like. And, boy, I just gotta Right, it without milking it. That'd be just... It's no big deal, Jake. It's no big deal. In your gear. Into a higher gear now. Yep, that's all it is. Mustn't let this go to my head. I think, assuming that Simon comes through and I go with Simon, then I think it really is fair to say I need never worry about money again as of now, because 10,000 will pay off my debt and give me an extra few grand just to coast on until the book is published, and then at that point, wow. I'm very aware immediately of the dangers of success, how this can go to my head, and if I take it too seriously or in any way it's not going to take credit for it. These are the forces. So that Simon says in the lap of the gods. And I said that's where we want it to be, and he laughed. And that was a moment of understanding between us, and that's where the focus must remain. This is the gods. This is the gods' business, and we are but pawns in their hands. And this book, boy, 3 weeks, from 3 weeks. From having the idea to actually getting a publisher in 3 weeks, it's just insane. That just takes off the chart altogether into something just uncanny. Yep. This is going to change everything. Everything. So stay focused. This is not me that is doing this. This is happening through me. And the moment I begin to take credit, that's the moment I lose it. It's hard not to. Hard not to. Lord, this is my intent. This is the manifestation of intent. Awesome. It's just completely awesome. Living life as normal. Don't change anything. Don't change anything. I just smoked 2 cigarettes. And that was really unnecessary alteration of behavior. I just can't afford to change my routine. That's what it is, my strategy, my approach, my behavior in any way as a result of this that's happening. As soon as they get thin end of the wedge, as soon as they start letting it change me, then I start coming undone, and it'll all be for nothing. I'll walk with care. It's on my doorstep. My plant, it decomposed there. Baby! Bumblebee. On my way to Wing Chun, I feel uplifted and exhilarated. For an invocation, candle, incense, thank you. Ceremony. Thank you, ceremony. The goddess and the god. I wrote an email to Liz, giving her the news and enlisting her aid, trying to get an energy reading on Orion and Simon and see how that looks. I'm glad I did that because I rather, perhaps foolishly, picked a card with the tarot as far as how this whole deal looked. Figuring that was as good a way of finding out or getting an indication
was asking what it is, but of course it's not. Well, I hope not, because what I got was ruin. Ten of Swords. Which, I mean, I couldn't really pick a card that was more negative and foreboding. And it was right in the middle of my dancing ceremony. I knocked the wind out of my sails for a while.
Briefly, Jordan Peterson was pretty unknown, working away at Ontario University. He had been at Harvard, and it had seemed like he was going to have a more glorious career, I think. But then chronic body pains in his family and mysterious illnesses and stuff. As far as I know, I haven't checked all this, according to my wife, led him to end up a much lower station in this College of Ontario, actually the University of Toronto. And it was there a couple of years ago that a controversy built up around him when he spoke out about his non-acceptance of legal compulsion to use new gender pronouns. Not that he said he wouldn't use them, this is for transitioning transgender people, but that he said he would not be compelled to use them. That he was rejecting not the pronouns per se, or transgender people's right to use them or ask other people to use them, but that they would be legally enforced. That language, or use of language, would become subject to law. Anyway, that stirred up something of a thing, and he became something of a phenomenon via YouTube and all of the reactions that it caused and the protests and so on by trans people and neoliberals and so on. And I was certainly interested in him during that period. But then more recently, he published a book, 12 Rules to Live By, something of that nature. And his fame has exploded to the point that he was called by the New York Times tentatively the most influential thinker in the Western world. His book has sold better than any other book published by Random House. It's number one on Amazon. It's the best-selling book in the world. I don't know if it still is. Probably is, because obviously getting more and more publicity. And he has become an almost messianic figure, right down to his updated Ten Commandments, if you like. And this is no doubt related to his identification with Kermit, the Frog, Pepe, Keck. Like, Jordan Peterson, I would say, playfully jumped aboard the Keck bandwagon in those early days of his notoriety by doing a YouTube video in which he wore a frog's tiara thing on his head, frog's head on top of his head, frog hat, and talked about Keck. And I forget all the details. I wasn't planning to talk about Jordan Peterson, so I don't want to risk fudging too much. The point is that Jordan Peterson's fate or his destiny is a pretty close match for what I had planned for myself back in 2002, even down to the archetypal possession. The difference is, and it's a key one, is that, as far as I can tell, Jordan Peterson wasn't looking for it. This does seem to have happened spontaneously to a great degree, I would think, from his point of view. I'm not saying that it wasn't part of a social engineering program and he wasn't picked by social engineers, chosen for a role and groomed and all the rest of it. I'm not ruling out that he knew that either, but in that case, that would be very different than myself, obviously. So in either case, if it's an entirely spontaneous phenomenon that Peterson himself didn't plan, or if it was manipulated by behind-the-scenes handlers with or without Jordan Peterson's knowledge, in either of those two cases, it's completely different from my case, which was that I was independently willing something to happen. I was willing myself to become archetypally possessed, and via that archetypal possession to be raised up to a platform or a ministry in the world whereby I would become a messianic figure. Even if it was a parody of a messianic figure, it would be one who had true wisdom to disseminate, true knowledge, true insight, divine revelation. I would carry the divine virus into the world via the platform that would be erected for me in the world so that I could reach the many millions of people who would receive my message. It's even possible to say that I was unconsciously protecting myself from archetypal possession by inviting it, because the archetypes, or those unconscious complexes, can only take us over when we're not expecting it. They have to take us over unconsciously. And I was attempting conscious archetypal possession, which is a contradiction in terms, I think. So to be fully aware of being archetypally possessed would end the possession. And I think the nature of archetypal possession is almost identical to the idea of ancient man of just being in the grip of the gods, You can't say no to the gods. You simply can't. I thought that I could keep my head on my shoulders, not get taken over by the demon Kek. Well, somebody who can keep their head on their shoulders in that regard probably isn't much use to an archetype to possess. Anyway, none of that happened, and now I'm getting to see it. If I want to look, it happening for Jordan Peterson, and feel the mix of envy with interest, with, well, relief, perhaps. Not sure, really. I mean, it's just that it's providing a mirror. Not a mirror I want to spend a long time gazing into any more than I want to carry on doing this podcast series, but a mirror that confirms my own demonic possession. Demonic. From that time.
Work for Simon today. We've got Lance. I left a message. A couple more points on the contract, which he agreed to very quickly and easily. So everything seems to be going fine there. What I think about the idea of this book coming out a month, say, in advance of the movie, how the bookshops are almost bound to get behind it, how it's just going to seem as though it is a Matrix. Obviously, it's a Matrix-related product, but I mean, it seems like it's part of the whole movie thing, and that potentially it's going to smell like wildfire. I see absolutely no reason why it wouldn't. It would be just strange if it didn't, provided the bookshops get behind it. But again, why wouldn't they? So, incredibly exciting. It really is. Awesome. And of course, we can do it all over again with the paperbacks and the sequels. It's just like it's been ordained, this whole thing. We're going to maintain the spell, the intent to ensure that nothing screws it up. Trust that Time Warner are going to be too tangled up with their AOL problems to give us any trouble. I mean, they always could if they wanted to. It's a done deal. The contract has been signed. By me, at least. And Malcolm wasn't around to sign it, so I've left the 3 signed copies with Simon. 4 o'clock, August 16th, 2002. There's a lot of 4s in there. 2 plus 2 is 4. 8th month, that's 4 plus 4, 16th is 4 times 4, and it's 4 o'clock. So there's a whole lot of 4s, 4 being the number of completion. And this is it. It is a done deal. Whatever happens now, I got £3,500 coming at me for 2 weeks' work. And, wow. I had dinner with Simon and this chap Trevor came along, who was also very enthusiastic about the book and who helped Simon get it get authorized to make me an offer in the record time that he did. He just saw the title basically and said buy it, and he I don't know how much he exaggerated, but he was saying that he said if you don't buy this property I'm going to walk. So certainly is a great believer in it. And shit, I forgot to say that to Simon.
He's a friend of Terry Gilliam's. And they worked together on a book and stuff, and he wants to... He says Terry Gilliam's a friend of the Wachowskis, and he wants to get the manuscript to Terry and get him to read it and see what he makes of it and what he thinks that the Wachowskis would say. So that's pretty full on. That's some pretty intense stuff right there. That was pretty bizarre having lunch with... I mean, this is Success City. I'm in Success City, and I don't know, I don't feel any different, really. I feel a little lighter of step and more confident, and my purpose is a little more clearly defined, a little more kind of impetus, energy. But, I mean, beyond that, I don't really feel any different. It just seems like I'm reaping what I have sown. So, cool. Cool, cool, cool. Yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, something's happening. Something is happening.
Well, as Mr. Upton says, contemplation of the truth has much greater value than expression of the truth. There is no expression without contemplation, but there is contemplation without expression. And the value of the expression is determined by the depth of the contemplation. I have expressed enough here to satisfy that nagging Luciferian ego and its desire to present itself as the ruler of its own hell, initially to lure people to worship, but finally in the final days when repentance is at hand, as a warning to those others not to do as I have done, to turn away from the mirror on the wall that tells us we are the fairest of them all, because that mirror lies. Telling a story is no way to get love for oneself. One might get loved as a great storyteller. Then one is being loved for one's stories, not for oneself. And it's 1 minute to three. I want to go walk in the sun. Life isn't a story. God has no story. Because a story has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And we don't. The reason to tell our stories, I think, is to see the holes in the plot. To see how they don't add up. And how the only way that they did add up was through our own collusion to deceive ourselves, believe the stories were true, that we told ourselves, and that we were the stories that we told ourselves. That the stories represented us. If we're moving into post-truth times, well, the next step after that, I suppose, is post-fiction. Once we see that we're made of fiction, then what comes after that? There ends the Chronicles of a False Awakening series, and for now, the Limitless, the podcast between. I will be gone from online activities from now until early April, when Prisoner of Infinity will be released, God willing. And I wish you all the best during this season of Lent and Easter. And thanks also for all of your support, emotional, psychological, financial, energetic, and otherwise. We shall see what's on the other side of this contemplative hiatus. This is Jason Horsley. One final time for the Limitless, the podcast between at horticulture.com. The same hole, I lost my ambition.